Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. That is where I will be linking below this interview. That's also where Mark publishes at least one, sometimes a couple articles a day, really breaking down what is catching his eye in terms of market moves and also economic data. Mark, we're going to start off kind of broad with this interview, dealing with the Fed and the expectation now that the market is telling us we could actually see 4 rate hikes this year. I know that has a lot of the perma bears saying, well, that could break the market just in itself. But the fact of the matter is the Fed really has started to accept the fact that inflation continues to rise. It is not transitory. At least it hasn't been, probably in their eyes, where they thought it would start to fade at this point. Plus, look, the Fed is really getting forced into now also talking about unwinding their balance sheet. Whole other aspect of that. Mark, what's important about the Fed, the upcoming meeting that is still a couple weeks off, in terms of the big picture for this year?
Yeah, and I think you're right. The Federal Reserve is probably one of the key drivers of the market right now. My sense is this, that there's 3 or 4 moving pieces to the Fed. The first is, when could they first raise rates? Now, they do meet, like you say, on January 26th. That's the two-day meeting end, January 26th. But the Fed is still buying bonds, so it can't really raise rates in January. The market has really pulled forward the first hike to March. And I say pulled forward, I say there's practically a consensus, if such a thing is possible. The Fed Funds futures market is pricing an almost certainty of a 25 basis point rate hike in March. At the end of last year, it was about 50%. But that tells you one thing the market has done, bring forward the Fed rate hike. The second thing the market has done is it now expects, like you were suggesting, 4 rate hikes. And how they get to that is, when you look at what that means is, in order to get to that 4th rate hike, it comes late in the year. So to prepare for it, to give you that flexibility just in case it's needed, because you remember those December dot plots, the Fed was talking about the median view at the Fed was 3 rate hikes. So to get to a 4th rate hike, at least you want to keep that window possibly open. Again, the underlying strategic goal is to maintain flexibility. And that's another reason why the market's looking for that March rate hike, because it wants to get in a 4th rate hike this year. And right now, as we sit here before the weekend, looking at about an 80% chance of a 4th rate hike already discounted in the market. So brought forward the first rate hike, extending the rate hike cycle this year. And the third big moving piece is the balance sheet. And the Fed's hasn't been as clear about the time frame for it, though Powell in his confirmation hearing did say it would likely take place this year. The market is expecting it somewhere around the middle of the year. But balance sheet shrinking means that when the Federal Reserve has a bond that it owns matures, rather than recycling those proceeds into buying another bond, it'll just let it mature and therefore shrink the balance sheet. The Federal Reserve is still debating this, and Powell suggests it's going to take 2 to 4 meetings to work it out. So it's not clear exactly when they began talking about it besides at the December meeting, but the market's sort of thinking that the balance sheet will begin shrinking somewhere around the middle of the year after what looks like to be the second rate hike.
Well, Mark, it's really crazy what a difference a year makes, because at the beginning of last year, if you recall, the Fed wasn't even thinking about raising rates until 2023. And now we're debating whether they're going to do 3 rate hikes or 4 rate hikes this year in 2022. So it's really an about face. And the market's done a pretty good job of digesting it, although when they did introduce the reducing the balance sheet, there was a little turbulence in the general markets. When we get to the middle of the year, do you think we'll see a little bit more market turbulence once they get a couple hikes in, if they do hike in March and if they hike again in May, even if it's just 0.25%? Do you think we'll start seeing a little ripples? Because so far, the markets are still at all-time highs, and it doesn't seem like there's that much trepidation in the general markets.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting, sort of that relationship, because what's the logic behind the Fed raising rates? It's not just that inflation, but it's also that the economy is strong. And strong economy has meant good earnings. In fact, you know, it sounds kind of morbid for me to say this right now, but corporate America has done pretty good during this COVID phase. Look at how strong earnings are. I want to say that earnings are roughly, say, ballpark in the 70% neighborhood. It's just remarkable. And some people even argue that those widening corporate profits could also help account for the higher inflation. The logic here is something like this. We're in the middle of a huge merger and acquisition wave. And that this leads to concentration, consolidation. And when businesses consolidate, right, when you're buying something else in your space, what you're trying to do is get rid of some excess capacity, become more efficient. And doing so allows then the business to raise prices because of its market position, but also prices rise because of a reduction in capacity. So it's a tough thing to consider. Last year, both bonds and stocks rallied. And I'd say that we've had some pullback in the U.S. stocks, a lot of volatility in the NASDAQ, giving back a couple months worth of gains. But I'm not so sure how much it would have taken place in any event, even if the Fed had not turned more aggressive. So I think that, you know, like you say, it sent a little like a ripple effect through the market. But when everything's said and done, 1.8%, we're about 1.76 today on our 10-year bond. With 7% inflation, I have to say that interest rates are still low enough. They're still stimulative, right? Real interest rates are still deeply negative. Nominal interest rates, even our like 2-year yield, right? So people get very worried about the Federal Reserve, how much tightening they're going to do, not just this year, but in the next year. And our 2-year yield is less than 1 percentage point. So 4 Fed rate hikes would take us up close to 1% on Fed funds. And yet the 2 years is telling us much more than that.
So, Mark, is that telling us that the markets can withstand even 4 rate hikes this year? So that means we're looking into potentially 2023 is when the Fed might need to slow down some of their rate hikes? Or do you think the markets can withstand even more than 4 rate hikes at current levels?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a bit tricky, partly because of what really happens to the economy. And my concern really is that the economy is more fragile than the Fed seems to think. And when I mean fragile, here's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the change from last year's budget deficit to this year's is going to be one of the sharpest reductions we've had in American history, much faster than after the great financial crisis. So I see fiscal policy tightening. It's already beginning to have an effect. You can see this because of some of the transfer payment programs expired in the middle of December. And then, of course, what happens? We get soft retail sales numbers. Not that it's always so tightly fit like that, but it all fits together right now, I suspect. I think, too, that a lot of the pent-up demand we've had, going to a ball game or going to a concert or some of our consumption, it's already absorbed a lot of the excess savings. And the other thing, I know we talked about this a bit last year, it still is in the back of my mind. The last 3 U.S. economic downturns took place after oil prices doubled. Well, oil prices have more or less doubled since the November 2020 U.S. election. Oil prices are still high. They actually made new highs in the past few days. And so I'm concerned that the combination of aggressive fiscal tightening, the doubling of the price of oil, and the type of tightening the Fed is talking about, 3 to 4 rate hikes and its balance sheet shrinking. So I think it's a challenge. So for me, the correlation here would be if the Fed does turn the economy down, which I think is headed anyways, even without the Fed, then I think that the stock market has to suffer a bit. But then again, where else are people going to put their money? I think that's really been the reason why this buy the dip strategies work. There's not a lot of alternatives available for many people.
Yeah, Mark, we keep hearing about Tina. There is no alternative. And people are basically forced into the general markets because they're not going to make any money in a savings instrument, in a deposit product. And the markets have continued to do pretty well. So the markets have been their savings account. But it should also be pointed out that the Fed is not doing this in a vacuum. There's a lot of other central banks that are also starting their tightening cycle. And you mentioned us off mic, some key news coming up out of some of the other central banks next week, maybe the next 2 weeks. Walk us through what you're seeing on a global scale as far as central bank tightening.
Sure. So it's true that the Federal Reserve is not the first major country to hike rates. Earlier today, South Korea did, becoming among the first country this year to raise rates. But as far as the larger countries go, Norway and the Bank of Japan meet next week. Now, both of them are going to likely sound hawkish. Norway hiked rates in December, so they'll probably wait till the next meeting to hike rates, but there's little doubt that Norway is going to be raising interest rates. Bank of Japan is not quite there yet. Today, their five-year note yield almost reached zero, which is the highest in about 5 years. Behind the Bank of Japan and Norway's central bank, Bank of Canada meets the following week, and a lot of things beginning to point to a Bank of Canada rate hike. The market's got a 50% chance priced in. Some very strong labor data. And with the Fed becoming more aggressive, I think we'll see the Bank of Canada become more aggressive. And then in early February, we're going to get the Bank of England to raise rates. It's likely to raise rates. It's about an 80% chance priced in. A 25 basis point rate hike. And why the Bank of England is important is that when we're talking about the balance sheet, the Fed's balance sheet, the Bank of England also recognizes that to normalize this tool, it's got to put it on quickly and take it off quickly. And what they've indicated was when the base rate, that's like their equivalent to Fed funds, when the base rate, their policy rate, gets to 50 basis points, which could be early February, they will begin allowing the balance sheet to shrink. That has not replaced the maturing issues. So the Bank of England is going to be really pointing the direction here, and I think that the Fed is not so far behind. But I'm thinking, too, about this TINA, and I think that maybe another way of thinking about it would be this, that sometimes, and this has been the case for the last several years, we as investors are mostly concerned about the return on our money. How much are we getting? But if the business climate changes, like I suspect it will, we'll go from being worried about the return on our money to the return of our money. And I think that will, again, I might say almost a normal or natural correction to the market, that the money will, as we've seen happening, the U.S. 10-year tested 180 and then pulled back to 170 as people began concerned about some growth issues and the high-frequency data. And so I wonder if that's really what it takes to change, is that the central banks do what they do, the governments do what they do, economy slows down, and then people get worried about the return of their money. Capital preservation becomes a more important principle than it seems to have been since maybe those dark days when the pandemic first struck.
Boy, that seems like a long time ago, doesn't it, Mark? Especially the way that the markets traded last year. It seemed like everybody was good with having their money in the markets because, well, it just kept on going up. Not so much the individual stocks, but broad averages definitely did. Let's also talk about currencies, too, because as much as Fed policy plays into the markets, central bank policy broadly also plays into the currency markets, but there's a lot of other factors here. The dollar had a good year last year, and it's pulled back a little bit from its recent highs of around 97 on the dollar index. Do you think the run in the dollar is over? Is this the pullback that a lot of the bears have been waiting for?
Yeah, you know, you got me wrong-footed. I mean, like, my big picture, I still think the dollar is going to fall. That's the third big cycle since the end of Bretton Woods is over, all that big historical stuff. But I had thought that a combination of factors was going to keep the dollar firm to start the year. I'm still thinking that Russia was not appeased by the U.S. and NATO, and they likely will still see in their interest to take another piece of Ukraine. Politics in Europe is going to get volatile with the Italian presidential election kicking us off in a couple of weeks, French elections in the spring. And then the third thing, of course, is this divergence of monetary policy. The U.S. two-year premium over Germany has essentially doubled in the past, say, 6 months or so, from about 80 basis points to about 160. I thought these things would keep the dollar bid, and instead, the dollar has begun off this new year under a lot of pressure. I don't have a good narrative for it. When I talk to some of my friends in different positions in the market, people just tell me two stories, really. One is that everybody was long the dollar, taking profits on the big move. So the dollar began weakening in the second half of December. And the other story that they tell me is that typically the dollar rallies into the Fed rate hike and then sells off on the first rate hike, almost a buy the rumor, sell the fact. But in my mind, the Fed rate hike in March is still a couple months off. I guess my best guess right now is, even though I thought the dollar was going to be stronger to start the year, I think the worst may be behind us. We're seeing some very interesting price action here ahead of the weekend, a key outside up day for the dollar index, it looks like. By that, I mean we made a new low for the move this morning. Then we rallied through the high, through yesterday's high. And if we close above yesterday's high, which it looks like we will, that would be technically a key reversal, suggesting to me that some kind of messy correction, that sort of retrace maybe part of that move from the end of last year is behind us. And just in time, too, for people like who You know, a year ago, imagine this, as the riot was taking place in the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, the dollar bottomed. The euro topped out, the dollar index bottomed January 6th. And some people say that, well, this year is going to be the mirror image. So where the dollar sells off starting in early January, but I think we should expect a bounce next week. And I know you are up there in Vancouver, and I thought that Canadian dollar is kind of interesting too. It looked to me like there's a big head and shoulders pattern that's been carved out in November and December, and that neckline is 126. We took out that neckline, and the measuring objective is about 122.5. However, the Canadian dollar put in a hammer candlestick yesterday, correcting higher after hitting about 125.5. So I'm looking for another bounce in the U.S. dollar against Canada, and then we could sell it again, playing for that 122.5. But take a look at the charts, an interesting head and shoulders pattern, which is not so common in the currencies.
Well, Mark, I just have one more question about the dollar for you, and that is, there could be a third option. It's not just that the dollar was topped out, technically. It's not just that maybe it was selling off in anticipation of the rate hike cycle. What about the narrative that we're also hearing, that it really is that the euro was so completely oversold, because it was, that maybe its bounce has weakened the dollar? So I wonder if that could be what explains the short-term move. But the bigger question would be, if we do see market turbulence later in this year, if we do see any geopolitical fireworks, if we do see any sell down in the markets because of the Fed rate hikes, do you think there could be a move back out of some of the markets into cash, and would that strengthen the dollar?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that, you know, that we did see a big sell-off. So far, say this week, the euro is really a middle performer. It's up about 0.4%. You know, it broke out above, you know, so we've been in that 112, 114 range, broke to the top end of it, and now back to flirting with the breakout level. I think that this price action is going to be very important to lend more credence to your view here. And the strongest currency this week, the Japanese yen, up 1.3%. And look at what happened. You know, early in the year, we rallied strongly, got to multi-year high, 116.30 or so. It looked like we really broke out, broke well above that 115.50 area that capped us at the end of last year. And then it turns around, and it's fallen, I want to say, for like six out of the last seven sessions. The dollar has fallen against the yen like that. So I'm still sort of thinking this is a counter-trend move here, and maybe a combination of position adjusting, overextendedness, all that kind of stuff. But I worry about the dollar really in the second half of the year. The economy, I think, is going to slow down. We're going to begin bringing forwards maybe other hikes we've been looking at in 2023, like the ECB itself. And so that's when I think that the twin deficit problem in the U.S. comes back to haunt us. But I still, given where we were, say, you know, the last 2 days, we've been below the dollar index, below the lower Bollinger Band, the euro above its Bollinger Band. We're pulling back into it now. I'm hesitant to really chase this market like this is the beginning of a big uptrend in the currencies and a big downtrend in the dollar. I'd like to fade it, but I'd be patient and wait to see what happens early next week.
All right, Mark, we'll wrap it up here. It's always great hearing from you. I know we had a couple-week break there over the holidays, but it's nice getting you back on the show, and thank you for outlining some of your expectations when it comes to central bank policy and currencies. Those have an impact on a wide range of markets. Mark, thanks again for your time. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.